Hi, it's Dave. And when we founded Galactic Netcasts back in 2011, we did it not to make money or become the most popular podcast network on the planet. We did it first to get together with friends to share our love of all things geeky like aliens and sci-fi. Of course, we've since broadened that out to include things like comic books, the paranormal, video games, board games, horror, science, and other topics. And over the years, we've never really asked you to do more than subscribe and maybe share our stuff with friends of yours who may like it too. And we've hardly ever came out and asked you directly for any kind of financial support until now. And we're not asking you to make a huge commitment or even something like Netflix, which is like $8 a month. But if you like what we do, please consider pledging at least $1 a month to help us cover operational costs like web and audio hosting. And maybe sometime in the future, we'll have enough in the budget for some advertising. Who knows? A bunch of people giving $1 a month can add up pretty quickly. For us, just you listening is good enough. But if you want to do more, go to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Again, that's Patreon, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Check out our rewards, and you might decide to commit to more than $1 a month. Either way, we thank you. And now, without further ado, here's your podcast. And of course, as always, a production of Galactic Netcasts.
This is Alpha Geek Radio. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
Attention, Galactic Collective. The Sci-Fi Geeks Club is next. Please stand by.
You can take part in the podcast by providing feedback. Send a message to galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Call the voicemail number at 805-328-3966 or leave an audio message directly on our website, galacticnetcasts.com. We also invite you to join the Galactic Collective. All the information and links can be found at gncasts.com/galacticcollective. That's gncasts.com/galacticcollective. Now, without further ado, hear ye, hear ye! Another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is officially called to order!
Why, hello there. Welcome to another production of Galactic Netcasts. I'm Dave Nelson, and joining me this week on the host panel, Mr. J.F. Dubow. Hello, J.F.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing, my fellow Canadian?
I'm doing good, my fellow Canadian. Although you are more actual Canadian than I am.
I know, you're kind of an imposter.
I am. I'm waiting. I'm on the bench, to use a baseball metaphor.
Oh, sports ball.
Yeah.
That's an interesting show to talk about that. Go on.
That person right there, the person laughing, is our guest geek this week. He is a lifelong Stephen King and Doctor Who fan. He's also a writer who has created his own universe of connected fiction called The Tomb's Legacy. His debut sci-fi novel, The Face Stealer, is the first book in the series and sets up his fictional world. The second, set 100 years in the future, looks at the repercussions from the first book. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, all the way from the UK and the future, Robert Scott Norton. Hey, Rob.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm awake. I'm here.
What time is it there?
It's 3 a.m.
Oh,
dear God.
Do you have plans?
What do you do to people?
But, you know, today's a great day already. You know, when it comes to you, it's going to be fantastic.
Cool. Well, thank you for getting up in the middle of the night for us. I know that's rough, but we really appreciate it. Now, I feel like I'm in the minority on this episode because I'm the only person here that's not a novelist. Because you guys are both have books and stuff. You're both write things down.
It sounds like Robert's a bit more advanced in that career path than I am, though.
Do you think?
I don't know. You look like you have actually published works.
Anyone can publish. It's easy.
Well, okay, let's do this. Let's start with Rob. Rob, why don't you just kind of break down real quick your writing history and the books that you have published, and then we'll move on to JF, and then we'll move on with the podcast. So The Face Dealer, tell us all about it. It sounds really. I don't want my face being stolen. That's not good.
I did get some criticism over the title, the 2B movie, I think, at one point. But it's kind of in the vein of Torchwood, bit X-Files-y maybe. It's a sci-fi thriller. It's set in Southport, which is my hometown. This is a quiet, sleepy retirement town. Nothing really ever happens. So I thought it's time to throw in a bit of an alien conspiracy, people stealing faces, hordeless, faceless assassins, all that kind of stuff. See what happens.
Because why not? I mean...
Yeah, I think so. I want to see how the Blue Rinse Brigade cope with people trying to steal faces. It'll be cool.
Now, are both your books available or just the Face Dealer right now?
So The Face Dealer is out now.
Okay.
And I've just worked with a great narrator called Paul Cram, who has done the audiobook for me. So the audiobook version is now available on Audible and iTunes. The next book I'm writing is just being edited at the moment, so I'm going through this editing process, and I hope to have the next three out by Christmas. That should be good. So the next one's called The Remnant Keeper.
Okay, and that's the one that takes place like 100 years in the future?
Yeah, so at the center of the tomb's legacy, there's this thing. So let's call that the tombs. And this is going to have repercussions across lots of different series that I'm planning to write. So stuff that's happening at the moment in The Face Dealer is going to really have some effects 100 years from now in The Remnant Keeper and that series.
I love connected universes. That's fun stuff.
I think that's what I love about it. I love... I think ever since watching Babylon 5 and seeing that you can thread story arcs all the way through this big, massive piece of work. But then I think even like Stephen King, when there was little snippets from some of his later books where I think it was Rose Madder and Gerald's Game, and there was this little crossover thing that really struck me. And it was like, what does this mean? And it was only when you read both books that these things finally clicked into place. I hope that when people read them, they stand as works in their own right, but readers that read more than one from a series or read different series will get some of the extra benefits of, that's what that means. That's what that means.
There's a lot of stuff to keep track of, though, Rob. Yeah, I hope you're writing this stuff down, like keeping track of it.
You know, I think Microsoft... OneNote is just fantastic for this. Keeping my own little wiki inside of that to keep track of all of these different events. Yeah, but this is writers. This is what we do. It's all a big mess up here, and try to make some sense of it on the page.
All right. So real quick, JF, I know you've been on a ton of times, and we talked about your previous book, but you have a new one that you're working on, right?
Yeah. It's worked on. I've done maybe three drafts of it so far, and I decided to toss into the Ink Share contest that's going on currently. Did I talk about this on a previous?
I don't know. I don't remember. I think you did. I think you've been doing this one long enough that you did talk about it. But I think it was just barely starting last time.
Okay, so I'll go about it really quickly. I don't want to steal Robert's thunder. And platform here, but essentially, it's funny because the previous book was a science fiction book, and this one is a fantasy horror book. It's currently on Inkshare, and I'm trying to get as many readers as possible, so people don't need to buy a ton of books, just to pre-order one to help get me published and get me to maybe be selected for the Nerdist collection, all you need to do is go to jfdubow.com/books, and you'll have more information there. The book itself is the beginning of a trilogy, and it's interesting because it's the way I like to describe it, the elevator pitch, which is kind of inaccurate because as authors, I'm sure Robert will agree, it's so hard to describe something in two sentences that you feel you need at least a few paragraphs, because two sentences just does not do justice to the genius of what we've created, the depth, the complications. But
the years of effort and heartache you've poured into it in two sentences.
Wow. Exactly. And usually try to refer it to known materials so that people know what you're talking about. So the dumbed down two second elevator pitch is that it's Stephen King's Stand By Me mixed with some Call of Cthulhu and sprinkled with Harry Potter for flavor.
Perfect.
So it's, that'll give you kind of the theme of it, but the synopsis is that in like this kind of backwater town in my lovely province of Quebec in the Eastern Township, there's this sort of great old god that, because of some cheap magic tricks, gets trapped somewhere, well, in a backyard shed, and basically the main characters need to sort of unravel the history of their town to figure out how to contain it, because it's evil and slowly getting free and, well, you know, corrupting the town as it goes along. And it's basically the uncovered the secret hidden history of their small town in the process.
You guys both really hate your small towns, it sounds like.
I went from a galaxy-spanning epic with robots to a small town. I'm trying to really cover all my bases.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. We'll talk a little bit more about your books before we wrap things up tonight, but let's get into the sci-fi news of the week, and that's why we're here, right? To talk about sci-fi?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
It's the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. We almost have to, right?
Hoping so.
Black Mirror, UK show. Rob, I'm sure you're very, very familiar with it, right?
Well, you say that. I've watched the first episode of Black Mirror. So this is with the first episode is the Prime Minister and the pig, yeah?
I'm not sure. I've only seen one myself.
It's a brilliantly dark show. And it was on, I think it was on Netflix when we first got our subscription to Netflix. And that was one of the shows that was really recommended for us to watch. It was very, very dark, but it's quality. It is a quality show. I just haven't got onto the rest of it.
It's an anthology series, very much like Twilight Zone, and all the stories take place in kind of the near future, with a future that's kind of gone wrong in numerous ways. And the series has been around for a couple of years, and now Netflix is going to produce the new season of it, according to Radio Times, via birth.movies.death. The streaming network will produce a series of new episodes of the sci-fi dystopian anthology series. You can catch up on the existing 7 episodes of Black Mirror right now on Netflix. I think it's pretty much, you know what? JF, I don't think it's available on Canadian Netflix. The last time I checked.
I was just checking. I was going to check because we're usually not very fortunate with these kind of things.
Yeah, I have to usually, I think the last time when I watched it was when I was still in the States. But I'm pretty sure it's very easy to get to as long as you have the proper add-ons to your browser. If you know what I mean.
I'm very skittish about that because the last VPN that was very popular had a hack in it. So
really? Okay.
I'm becoming a bit cowardly.
Which one did you use?
Was it ProXPN?
Yeah.
I remember.
I'm using ZenMate, which is a free one. It's just it's a Chrome add-on, and it works really, really well. I recommend it.
Well, we'll talk after the show. I might need to hook up on that, because seriously.
Well, it's free. I mean, it's in the Chrome. It's in the Chrome store. So you just look up VPN and you'll find it. So
I'll look it up.
So yeah, this is good news. Netflix has a great history of, well, they're a very short history, right? They haven't been around that long, but very short but sweet history of great original content. And it looks like, I mean, I think this series is in really good hands. Don't you guys think?
Well, Netflix. Sorry, I said Amazon because I'm trying to purchase Robert's books. Netflix had an amazing track record so far as for their original content. If you look at just Daredevil, is such a wonderful adaptation of the character, and they've been knocking pretty much every series out of the park. I mean, there's certain things that were miss for general public consumption, but mostly because they were sort of niche things or things that weren't aimed at the geek audience that we're used to seeing Netflix target.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, I'm very optimistic. And if that means that they might be bringing the rest of the series to Canadian Netflix so I don't have to use a VPN, I'm all for it.
Rob, are you, I didn't ask you this before we got you on. Are you a comic book person or no?
So I've had periods in and out of comic books, so I don't tend to read much stuff regularly now, but I'll definitely pick up stuff like Ultimate Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. I dip in and out of. But I do love it. Like Daredevil, I mean, on Netflix, that was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think before that, we had no idea how good Netflix productions could be, and I think that was really opened everyone's eyes to what they can do. And like you say, safe pair of hands. They've got to do a good job with this.
Yeah. I think it's perfect for a platform like Netflix, especially being an anthology series. I don't think you really need that big of a budget for this type of series. I think you just need really good writing. And I think, what's his name? Charlie Booker?
Charlie. I mean, in terms of production, it was a really well-produced show, but there isn't the expense that you'd imagine like a show like Daredevil is going to cost to make.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe they can tie Charlie to a desk and see if we can get more scripts than, he'd planned to write.
Well, it sounds like he's working on them right now. So, maybe they can get a larger season or series, sorry. A larger series out of him than just what he's done so far.
I suppose with it being an anthology as well, if he was to act as a showrunner for it and not have to write every episode himself, then maybe we can have a lot more episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you'd expect from an anthology, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll keep everybody up to date on this as the story develops. Moving on to Star Wars and a book story, actually. This is Star Wars Aftermath. The author responds to complaints over a new gay hero. The novel by Chuck Wendig. Are you guys familiar with Chuck?
Yeah, I read his blog for a bit.
You did?
His blog's great, Jeff. He's worth following to see what his thoughts are on publishing.
I'll look into it then. I'm always curious about that.
So this is the story that takes place right after Return of the Jedi and kind of explains everything that's happened between that movie and Episode 7. And he's received sort of a bad response by a subsection of fandom upset over the introductory of a gay character into the mythology. I guess people can't handle their Star Wars characters being gay, apparently. I don't know.
Now, incest was fine, but no gays, please.
Yeah. Giant slugs, that's no problem. Gay characters. Whoa, it seems a strange thing to get concerned about.
And apparently it's only like mentioned once during the entire book. Like it's almost in passing that he mentions that he's gay. He's propositioned by a female lead, and it's a fun moment, but a minor one in terms of the overall plot. So it's not really a major part of the story. He just happens to be gay. So what's the big deal?
I think the mistake with that was when the book was first announced, I remember a few months ago, the first time this was mentioned, that there was a gay character, instead of announcing, oh, this is a Star Wars book and this is a story and these are the important plot lines, they made it, like the media made that a new story. And like you say, in the book, it's I mean, it's just something that's there. It's like saying Luke Skywalker is blonde and has blue eyes. It's just a character detail. But the media blew it out of proportion and brought attention to what should have been a minor fact, which I think is a gargantuan mistake. I know what they meant well, because they wanted to make the novel look more progressive, but to be progressive, you need to just accept that these things are part of the story and not make a big deal out of it. I'm just looking forward to the point where characters that are parts of minorities, it's no longer a big deal, and we can just have these be normal characteristics without everybody jumping all over that.
His quote is great. He says, "If you're upset because I put gay characters and gay protagonists in the book, I got nothing for you," the author wrote in his blog. "Sorry, you squawking Saurian. Meteor's coming, and it's a fabulously gay Nyan cat meteor with a rainbow trailing behind it, and your mode of thought will be extinct. You're not the Rebel Alliance. You're not the good guys. You're the effing Empire, man. You're the shitty, oppressive, totalitarian Empire."
Totally.
You know, I wouldn't even have said that, because some people will say, "Oh, cool, I'm a Sith, I'm so badass." This mode of thinking in 2015, you're neither the Rebel Alliance or the Empire. You're irrelevant.
Yeah, that's true.
You're passé. You're from a bygone age that doesn't matter anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish they wouldn't have pointed this out, because it's not that. I mean, it shouldn't be a big deal, but they made it a big deal.
Exactly, and that's my point. Like, I want to see diversity. I just don't want everybody pointing their finger at diversity all the time, because that defeats the purpose of accepting diversity. Accepting diversity means having it integrated in our media in this absolutely natural and normal organic fashion, not always pointing and going, "gay" or "black." Even if you're doing it because you think you're doing good, you're still setting these traits apart and basically reinforcing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Bad media.
Yeah, it's too bad. And it's really too bad that it has to be a big deal in this day and age. It doesn't have to be a big deal. Like, when they change the race of a character like Miles Morales being Spider-Man, who cares?
I do care that they changed the race of Johnny Storm. And hear me out. I think that if you're going to change the race of Johnny Storm, you should change the race of Sue Storm, because they're supposed to be the same, you know, they're supposed to be brother and sister, unless you have like an adoption plotline or whatever. It's not a question of race. It's just because the story means, you know, has the family dynamic. And I'm very pro protecting the story. Race, I mean, I don't care what race they are, as long as they remain siblings, because that's integral to the story.
Do you guys know how they explained it in that movie? I didn't see the movie.
No one did.
I don't know. Was there an adoption thing?
I think it was. Yeah, because the head of that, whatever the company or agency that's working on this technology, he talks about his family. Like, his kids. So I think, and he's black. So I think maybe Sue was adopted, possibly.
So they still kept the family dynamic.
Yeah.
Okay, no, I don't care.
Yeah.
Well, going back to the gay thing, 10 years ago when Doctor Who came back and Russell T. Davis was announced as the showrunner for that, the British media were all over that as well. Oh, there's going to be a gay agenda. you know. It just got ridiculous. And then it was only when the show came out that the media actually, you know, stood away from it and accepted that just wasn't the case. But it's just the media picking these things out and blowing them into ridiculous.
Well, Rob,
can we talk about the gay agenda? I mean,
this is what elements of fandom were calling for Russell. They were saying Russell had a gay agenda. It's like, well, and Russell in interviews has said, well, you know, as a gay man, there are times when it might be appropriate to, you know, promote that and talk about that, especially in interviews and stuff, because the situation is it can feel like a minority, and he does need to make some of these points. But to suggest that just because Russell was gay and he was writing for Doctor Who, that inherently made Doctor Who more gay. That was just a ridiculous thing that the media wanted to run with.
No. What makes Doctor Who more gay is having a cane with a question mark or a 10-foot scarf or ridiculous patchwork clothing. I'm sorry, but having the showrunner for Doctor Who be gay feels super... absolutely normal. This is as natural as it gets, because the Doctor is pretty damn fabulous. Also, never had a girlfriend that I know of, so I don't know what they were upset about.
If gay you mean fun, then totally a gay agenda, because it's a fun series.
I just find the term gay agenda hilarious.
Yeah, because they're all conspiring behind the scenes. We're gonna get them all gay.
Why?
We just need to get rid of the media. Get rid of it.
Here's the listener question on this story. How do you guys feel about a gay Star Wars character? Does it bother you? Does it like affect your perception of the story? Let us know by emailing galacticnetcasts@gmail.com or call our voicemail number 805-328-3966. I know what the answer is going to be. I know that nobody's going to care, but just if there's somebody out there, I want this explained to me why it bothers you so much.
Here's how it could bother me, if you want an example. And I, from what I hear, that book doesn't do that. But Star Wars in general hasn't been very heavy in romantic story. Even the relationship between at first Luke and his sister, creepy, but eventually between Han and Leia, has always been very far in the background of other events. Now, what scared me originally when it was announced as a freaking article headline that there was a gay character is that the love story was going to be, there was going to be a love story between that character, it was going to be front page, it was going to be, like, that was going to be the spine of the entire narrative, which doesn't feel very Star Wars. Not that I'm against romance, it's just, like, when have we seen that much romance in Star Wars? And then, like, it's revealed, oh, no, this is a footnote, it's just media making a big deal out of it, so I'm fine with it. But, so it's less about gay or not gay as much as if I'm reading a Star Wars book, I want it to be like action packed and future and the Force and all that, and maybe a touch of romance, but not too much.
Well, I mean, Star Wars isn't really sci-fi; it's more science fantasy, right? And there tends to be a little bit more romance and relationship stuff in fantasy, right?
Yeah, but if you look at like the history of Star Wars, it's always been something that, mind you, they did try in the prequel for. With mixed results, but it's never been that heavy into the relationships, because relationships take away from laser swords and laser fights. So
that's true. Man, I can't wait to see that that Kylo Ren, right? He's the one with with the homemade lightsaber with the kind of what that would be on a
cross guard,
yeah, cross guard blades. That looks badass.
That extremely dangerous cross guard.
Yeah, you got to watch yourself.
Well, the way I see it, the only thing that, you know, so far in general, mostly, one of the only things that can stop a lightsaber is another lightsaber blade. So having no cross guard or having a metallic cross guard makes it dangerous that someone can just slide their lightsaber and cut your hands off. So having little lightsabery cross guards is... that just makes sense. It's perfect. It's dangerous, but they're swinging laser swords around that can cut through a limb like it's butter. Then they're super skilled. And surely they can handle a cross guard.
All right. Let's move on to comic book stuff. Let's talk comic books. Zach's
By the way, Robert, if I talk too much, cut me off, because I just can't shut up.
Yeah, when we get JF on, like I wasn't worried tonight. Because Brad was supposed to be on this episode, but he's not feeling very well. And I'm like, well, JF's on, so he's basically 2.5 people anyways.
You need to get some dictation software, JF, so you can write novels twice as fast.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Maybe. But I like writing. I like typing.
Okay, let's talk about comic books. Zack Snyder on adding more Batman and Jason Momoa defending Aquaman. So these are two DC stories. While talking with the Daily Beast, Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice director Zack Snyder addressed the rumor that Batman will get the emphasis in the upcoming film. I had to actually change the story because I had the rumor, and then this story popped up about the interview, which explained a lot, because the rumor is like, the Warner Brothers people like the Batman character so much, and they like Ben Affleck so much that they're going to give him more screen time, when in reality, it's only because there's already been a Man of Steel movie. So the reason there's more Batman in this film is to kind of set up the story, set up the character, because apparently this Batman is going to be different from the Chris Nolan movies. So Zach was like, well, we need more time to explain his character. And that's pretty much it. Do you guys feel like we need more setup for any kind of Batman character? Because I think it's pretty well-covered ground, right?
Yeah, I think we've seen Batman Origins plenty. I think people that go to see this movie, do we need to see that? I don't know. To be honest, I'm not going to be a fan anyway. I couldn't stand the Man of Steel movie.
We're going to have a problem.
Well, okay. But you might like this movie, Rob, because, I mean, it's Batman beating up the Man of Steel. So you hate the Man of Steel, so you can root for Batman the whole time, right?
Yeah, okay. So that could be worth seeing, yeah.
I personally feel like they're very careful not to say that they need more time to give Batman an origin, but they say a setup because it's a different Batman, not just because it's a different origin for Batman. And I know we see this snippet of his parents getting killed, which is probably just a flashback or something very, very short in the story, probably to establish the character a bit. But I think what they're trying to say is that they want to make clear why Batman is who he is, how he is, and also why is he going after the Man of Steel in the storyline. For that, you need to have a very good explanation of the character.
Well, I mean, the setup too, also, I just said two also, that's weird, it's an older Batman who's been retired for a while, and he gets pulled back in. And the reason he gets pulled back in is because of the events of the first movie. At least that's the perception mm-hmm. that I'm getting from everything I've read, heard, and the trailer I've watched.
There's not as much information as people seem to think about this movie. There's a lot of speculation. But the current rumors is that Batman was Batman, and then Robin got killed, probably by the Joker, and he went, all right, enough, done, because he didn't want more blood on his hands. But seeing the arrival of a Kryptonian changed the game. The arrival of an army of Kryptonians completely changed the game. He decides to put the cowl back on because he can no longer, like, he realizes that him staying idle and not doing anything is costing more lives than being active. So he gets back into it.
And in this movie, Gotham City and Metropolis are across the river from each other. So that's just slightly different.
Described as a Seattle-Portland situation.
Yeah, well, actually like closer than that, because I don't think Seattle and Portland are that close. I think they're pretty...
Well, it's just a comparison I read.
Like, oh, really? Okay. But I think what I have, the perception I'm getting is they're actually right across the river, so they're right next to each other.
I don't think that's necessary, considering that, I mean, Bruce Wayne would have offices in a city called Metropolis, which I assume is the largest city in the United States in that universe.
Yeah.
If, you know, Wayne Industries, like, I've always found it kind of weird that Wayne Industries is only in Gotham. Most billion-dollar corporations might have their head office in one city, but they'll have other offices elsewhere.
Yeah. I don't know. So, maybe they do have them elsewhere. They just don't say it. They don't talk about it.
That's true. But anyways, the idea, like, what's been made clear is that during the fight, and we see it clearly, people pointed out as an Easter egg in Man of Steel, but turns out it was more than that. And we see a Wayne Industries building gets scrapped. And they make it clear that obviously he had at least employees, probably friends, maybe family in there.
Yeah.
Which is what makes him sort of angry.
And going back to the whole more Batman, there is going to be more Batman because Batman's going to also be in the Suicide Squad movie next year. And then Ben Affleck is directing his own standalone Batman movie. There's no word yet of another Man of Steel movie. So it does definitely sound like there's going to be more Batman.
Yeah, well, the problem with Superman is Superman is damn near impossible to write with.
Yeah, it
is. To write for. Because, and that is one of the reasons why I personally liked Man of Steel, is because they created a flawed Superman or a Superman with an arc. A lot of people were pissed because, oh, Superman is not perfect yet. But if you start a movie with a Superman that's perfect, you wind up with the Superman movies that we've already had, where basically there's only two things that can defeat him: kryptonite and kidnapping his girlfriend, which is stuff that we've seen so many times. The idea that they've started with a Superman that needs to learn his limitation, learn where he fits in the world, gave him an arc. And if you're going to have a main character that is going to be the tentpole, not just for one movie, but for an entire universe, and Superman is the tentpole for DC, you don't have a choice. When you have a god in your story, he's central, period, inevitable. So having Superman have an arc, sort of a development that's going to happen over several movies, is, I think, crucial and important and interesting, as opposed to just having him go, I'll save all the kitties stuck in trees because I'm goddamn Superman. Also, if you're trying to create a somewhat realistic, not too goofy series of especially a series of movies where you have a Superman, because Marvel doesn't have that problem. Marvel, one of their most powerful characters right now is Thor, and Thor's always busy in Asgard. The whole point of Superman is that he's quote-unquote trapped on Earth. And if you have Superman the way people want him to be, or the way people expect him to be, the first movie is Man of Steel, and the second movie is the world is perfect and nothing is wrong ever again because he's a god.
Yeah,
so you need to have that development.
Yeah,
and
no.
I'm curious, the idea of having that second movie be Batman trying to take him to task and beat the crap out of him is a very interesting move, and I'm curious to see where they're going to take that.
Yeah, I think your argument is the first argument that I've heard that actually is convincing me to the pro-flawed Superman's story arc.
It's not a perfect movie. I'm just saying that what a lot of people have clamored that they wanted out of that movie would have been a boring movie. It would have been a terrible movie.
Rob, what did you not like about Man of Steel?
I think it was more maybe visually and tonally. It was just such a dark movie just to watch. And perhaps I was one of those few that loved Superman Returns and just loved the colourfulness of it. And maybe there was the nostalgia kick as well with all, the John Williams stuff kicking in, and my childhood was betraying me a little bit. I just couldn't find the heart in Man of Steel. It just didn't float my boat at all.
See, I'm an optimist. So the way I see it, and I'm hoping I'm right, because if I'm right, this is going to be absolutely brilliant. Is a lot like the common wisdom is that DC is supposed to be quote unquote catching up to Marvel by basically imitating their plan. Clearly, they're not doing that. They're doing their own thing. And I think their own thing is that they're starting in this dark place and they're going to move to a lighter place. We're going to see more color. We're going to see more of that optimism as, like, right, first movie, you have a confused Clark Kent discovering what his limitations are and fighting other Kryptonians. Like, it's a very dark place to start with. Then he's going to be fighting Batman, who is also coming from a dark place, but they're clearly, since it's called, Dawn of Justice and is leading to a Justice League, we know there's a reconciliation. So we know how this movie ends. So the movie is going to be about the journey, and the journey is about this reconciliation, which will probably involve Wonder Woman and other Justice Leaguers coming in and just getting brighter and brighter movie after movie.
Can I use this as an opportunity to segue, JF? Please.
Your show.
You opened it up for me, and I got to take it. So One of the other characters that will be making an appearance in Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, is Aquaman. It's been confirmed that Aquaman will be at least in one scene. And the guy playing it, Jason Momoa, I love that guy. He was at Fan Expo in Toronto last weekend. And at his panel, he answered some questions about his upcoming role as Aquaman. He couldn't say much, obviously, but he did address some very broad brush things, like whether the character will be as dark as Superman and Batman seem to be, and what he has to say to fans who make fish jokes about the character. Now, the character is a bad rap, mainly from the Super Friends cartoons of the 70s and 80s. He was very goofy, Aquaman was.
I think the Aquaman's bad rap, because when we were watching cartoons as kids, we were very forgiving of characters like Aquaman being ridiculous, because, I mean, even The Flash is kind of stupid. Like, superheroes in the 80s were kind of dumb. Mm-hmm. But there's this internet comedian, one of the early guys who now collaborates with Cracked, the guy, his moniker is Sean Baby, had a very, very long, very hilarious, but very logical explanation of why Aquaman is ridiculous, and that caught like wildfire and it's become kind of the background noise for Aquaman.
Okay. So Jason Momoa said it's cute and funny. People make fun of him. There's a bunch of jokes about him, which I'm sure that's what he's referring to. But I'm like, just wait. Let's just wait a little bit and then you can make jokes, Momoa said. So basically he's saying, watch this movie before you judge, because it sounds like he's definitely, this version of Aquaman is going to be very heavy, very serious. And it's not the only change, because Aquaman has traditionally been a very Caucasian character before, and Jason Momoa is Hawaiian, so he's very much darker skinned, which actually makes more sense to me, it seems. Like, if you're going to have a person that is from the ocean, who lives in the ocean, more than likely he's going to be darker skin than lighter skin. Kind of like the whole Caucasian Jesus. Jesus probably wasn't Caucasian.
No, he definitely wasn't Caucasian. Yeah. It is impossible that he was geographically.
Yeah. So we have Batman, we have Superman, we have Wonder Woman, and we have pretty much confirmed both Aquaman and The Flash will be making a brief appearance in Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice next year. So we have the makings of the Justice League of America.
So do you think that we're going to get that far with all of these movies? Because there's talk at the moment around a bit of superhero movie fatigue setting in with lots of superhero movies planned over the next few years. Yep. The audience is going to get bored of this.
I think they have too much of an investment. Unless attendance severely drops off, I don't see. I believe that they're going to at least get to the Justice League movie, because you have. I don't know if they'll get to the standalone Flash or Aquaman movie, but I definitely see them getting to both the Justice League and the standalone Batman movies, at least as far as, well, obviously as far as the DC universe goes. What do you think, JF?
I think we're fine, because one of the things about superhero movies that's been mostly demonstrated by Marvel, actually, but DC is, I'll get to that, but Marvel has shown that their movies are not superhero movies. Ant-Man is a heist movie with a superhero. The first Captain America was a period piece with a superhero. The genre of the movie is less isn't superhero. You have a genre, whatever they choose for it to be, and then they put a superhero in there, which means that even though superhero movies are all over the place and we get about a dozen each year, they still all feel kind of different and sort of feed a different hunger. Now, one of the things that's interesting is the fact that DC has been getting a lot of flack for being so dark with their universe that they only have one movie of right now. So, but they've been getting a lot of flack for that. But I think if there is one company right now that is thrilled that DC is going dark, is Marvel. Not because they want DC to fail. They want DC to succeed with a darker universe, because then it feeds this variety in the superhero subgenre.
Where there's dark, so there's light.
Well, that's the thing. As long as there's a lot of variety in these movies, people will keep seeing them. The problem will come when they all feel like they're the same movie, then we're not going to go see them. But as long as it feels fresh and new and we can keep seeing different things every time we go to a superhero movie, we'll be able to stretch this out almost forever.
Okay, so let's ask the listeners this question. Do you think there's going to be superhero and comic book movie fatigue? Let us know by emailing galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, or jump on our website at gncasts.com and click on the there's a little leave us a voice message thingy. That's the best word I can use for it, on the left-hand side of each page of our website, and just click on that, leave your voicemail there, let us know what you think about this. Is there superhero fatigue? Isn't there? What are your thoughts? Let us know. We would love your feedback on that. All right. So we've done DC. Let's do Marvel real quick. Captain America Civil War isn't about secret identities. That's what a new report over at birth.movies.death claims. Instead of going down the same route that Mark Miller or Mark Millar? Do you guys know?
That was Mike Mylar. I don't know.
Now you're just making things up.
Like the like the balloon? Like the balloon material, Mylar?
Yeah, Mark Mylar. That sounds good.
Okay. Mark Mylar and Stephen McNiven's Civil War comics have gone. They're not going that same direction. The Marvel Cinematic Universe will take a slightly different approach. In the upcoming movie, according to the report, there is no registration act. There are accords, a global move to govern the superheroes. Many of the world's governments are concerned about a unilateral superpowered strike force that answers to no one now that S.H.I.E.L.D. has been destroyed. The divide between Captain America and Iron Man boils down to that famous Latin quote that gave us one of the best comic book stories ever, "Who watches the Watchmen?" Which makes sense, because most of the Marvel superheroes do not wear masks. I mean, the only one that will be wearing a mask, really, is Spider-Man, and he's going to be introduced in this movie. So he hasn't really even been around yet in the MCU, right? You guys still there?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know much about the Civil War stuff, but what my thoughts are, you can't take the movie and then...
be a teenager.
I think JF is behind us a little bit. JF, we're losing you.
But he's not. It's not like he's going to be.
Okay, give him a second. He'll catch up, hopefully. JF has a history of weak internet, so I'm not surprised this hasn't happened before or already. Rob, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Continue with what you were saying, please.
So I don't know much about the Civil War story, but if it's that the movie isn't going to follow what's already been laid down in the comics, then I've got no problem with that at all. I think two different mediums, and as a writer, you've got to play to the strengths of the medium that you're working for. So the writer will want to be making the best story they possibly can with that kind of theme around it. And do you really want to go and see a movie which tells the exact same story that you've already read about? Maybe, maybe not. I think it's a good thing. Something original.
Yeah, and I mean, both Marvel and DC, both in the TV and the movie universes, they've already made different versions of stories. Like, the Flash on the Flash TV show is not the same Flash that we've seen in the comic books. There's slight differences. Same thing goes for the other Marvel movies that have already been released. It's not the same story. Like the Ant-Man movie, for example, is not it's not the same story as told in the comic books, because they can't do the same stories. I don't think they'd want to do the same stories, because just to prove your point, Rob, it's just like, you know, p- picking up the book and a book and like, would you want like, okay, say for example, some studio picks up your book, right? And they want to make a movie out of it. Would you want the movie to be exactly the same as your book?
No, I would want the movie to be the best movie it could be. And if someone wanted to take that book and develop it, then I think you've got to give the other creators that chance to create. You've got to take those walls down and let them do what they think is best for that medium. I had the same thing when we're thinking about the audiobook as well, is that although it's like Paul's American narrating all of my English characters, and at first that's a little bit strange, but as a creator, you've got to say, okay, well, I'm handing this over now, and you've got to do something with it, creative, and this is yours to do with now. I think that's the best approach.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. JF, are you back?
I agree also.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're back.
I think so. Am I back? Yeah.
You're right to agree, JF.
actually, I think this is something I brought up in a previous episode, how the idea of creative control being that, basically, you reflect my opinion perfectly. The idea of wanting to see how other people interpret your work, giving it their own spin, and also that the fact that people who work on movies probably know how to work on movies more than people who work on books. So of course there's a bit of collaboration that needs to happen to make sure that sort of the spirit of the book remains, but at the same time it's a different medium and letting the experts do their job is important.
Yeah, and you can see examples with, you know, Harry Potter. There's collaboration there. You know, she's created this whole universe, she's passed it over, and she works with the people that know best how to turn that into movies. And I think it would have been a mistake if they'd have just let her hold the reins too tightly and create new versions of those books. It's not what it's about. It's about letting other people into your world and expanding it. And that's the only way you can expand things, I think, is bringing new creative minds in.
And this slight change that they're going to do with Captain America Civil War actually makes sense to the already established Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think it makes more sense than to have secret identities exposed.
And let's face it, the whole Registration Act is an excuse to have the Civil War. What the excuse is doesn't matter as much as how the Civil War unfolds. Basically, the split happens and eventually the reconciliation and the fighting in between, which is very important, of course, and the intrigue that sort of ties it all up together. But what causes that doesn't matter as much as people seem to think.
We're really going to be entering a time where our superheroes are not going to be getting along in the next couple of years, huh? Because you got Batman fighting Superman, you got Captain America fighting Iron Man. Can't we all just get along?
Well, what's going to be fun? Well, yeah, but right after we're going to get another Guardians of the Galaxy, and that's going to be like this rock is good fun.
Yeah, that's true. Were you going to say,
it's
JF?
Good variety.
Were you going to say something before that? I don't know.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I was going to, but Robert summed up my thoughts pretty much very concisely, so.
Okay, all right.
Whatever. I can't put it in better words than he did.
Okay. And, hey, that wraps up our news. Before we get into our big question of the week, I need to plug something that we're doing. We have a really cool guest coming on this podcast in a couple of episodes. His name is Andy Weir. You may know him as the author of The Martian. We've had him on the Sci-Fi Geek Club before, but he's coming back on actually the day before the movie adaptation of his book The Martian comes out, and you can be on this very podcast with him as a panelist, asking him questions or just joking around with him, because he's a really nice guy and he would appreciate the joking around with him. So how you can get in on this podcast and be on the podcast with Andy Weir is just by going to, we have a very short web address to remember. It's tiny.cc/Andy Weir, tiny.cc/Andy Weir. And all the details will be on that page to tell you how you can get in on this cool contest. But I will give you a little bit more detail. It involves our Patreon account, which is patreon.com/GalacticNetcast. And what we're trying to do is trying to raise just a little bit of money to help us with operational costs like web hosting and audio hosting. It's a very small amount that we're trying to raise. And every time that you commit to a certain dollar amount per month, not per episode, just per month, you'll be entered to win for a chance to win a spot on the panel for that podcast with Andy Weir, which the same podcast that I'm sure he's going to be talking about meeting Matt Damon and hanging out at the set and being really excited about the movie coming out the next day. It's going to be an awesome podcast, and you can be here to experience it. tiny.cc/AndyWeir for more details. Okay. Big question this week. I know that Rob is a huge Doctor Who fan, so I thought, let's talk a little Doctor Who this week. And I'm kind of sad that Brad is not here because he's a big Whovian as well. I don't know what JF's Doctor Who knowledge is. I know you.
I'm one series behind. So the series that we're going to be discussing, that's the one I haven't seen yet.
Okay. Well, I really don't. Well, okay. I guess it would matter a little bit with the question I'm going to ask, but I'm sure that you will still have.
I'll have opinions.
Yes. Yes, you will.
Don't worry.
Okay. So some people have complained that the last season or last series of Doctor Who fell a little flat. Now, Rob, I want your opinion on this. Do you think the last season didn't live up to the expectations that Peter Capaldi was going to bring to the show?
Which people? Where were they? Which rock were they under? I think in terms of last series, it was a fabulous reset. This happens every time we change the Doctor. The show feels a little bit fresh again. And that's what happened to Series 8. I understood that the reception to it was really, really positive. But there's always this vocal minority who just hate Stephen Moffat, and they just want to go around a bit of Moffat bashing. Oh, it's time for him to go. It's not like Doctor Who was back in 1987. And you think, well, no, and it's not the same show that came back in 2005 either. The show thrives on change. That's been probably the only constant since it came out. I don't think it's got anything to worry about. I think Season 8 was a great series. I think Season 9 will be fantastic as well.
Okay. There are some critics out there that say that Stephen Moffat is basically telling the same story over and over again, just with different actors and slight changes in story. I'm guessing that you're going to disagree on that, right?
Well, I suppose JF, if we talk around story theory, I mean, how many stories are there?
Seven.
There you go.
Yeah, that's right. Basic story concepts.
Man versus nature, man versus self. Like there's a list. It's very disingenuous to actually boil down storytelling to saying that there's only seven stories, because the story is not the one sentence description or like the three words description of what happens. I mean, saying that these are the only seven stories is actually the only seven conflicts. And from there, you can layer these conflicts to create more complex plots, et cetera, et cetera. So it's whatever. There are stories that are being told over and over again and just in different ways, and we still go back to see them. Romeo and Juliet's been reinterpreted a million ways, and we still can't get enough. So I don't see what the problem is.
And the show isn't just the writing. I mean, that's a massive part of it, obviously. But even if you are telling the same story, you bring in a different director, you bring in different actors, different designers, and you can tell similar stories, and it will feel different every time. And over 50 years, that's what they've been able to do.
Yeah.
There's some episode synopses coming out around season 9 with just the Doctor on his own. So this is a bold thing. So he's definitely trying to stretch the boundaries of the stories you can tell in Doctor Who.
Yeah, I am putting the horse before the cart. No, the cart before the horse. A little bit. I mean, it's kind of too early to say that this next season, we're going to need some change after this next season. I'm just playing devil's advocate. I mean, I am speaking in the words of some of the critics out there that said that last season was a little bit weaker than previous seasons. Like, there's
we're
been people
accusing you, Dave. It's cool.
Okay,
it's
all I'm just trying to cultivate some lively discussion here. I'm trying to create conflict, actually.
Well, so, to be honest, I mean. Yeah, go ahead, Robert.
I was going to say, so have you heard of the rumor that Private Eye magazine was putting out that maybe season 10 wouldn't be a full series next year?
Yeah, I heard the rumor that there's not going to be any new episodes in 2016. That's what I heard. Besides maybe the Christmas special.
So far, there's been nothing to prove or disprove that. I don't think that was a great idea when they did that. Did every Tenants last year, and we had some patchy episodes. I don't think they'll be going for that this year or next year rather.
Okay, so let me just stir the pot a little bit more here. What would you guys, especially Rob, feel about maybe a new showrunner or maybe a female doctor? Do you think we'll ever get to the point where we will need to implement either one or both of those?
Well, I think a new showrunner is inevitable at some point. I'm not one of the crowd that wants to get rid of Stephen Moffat. I think he has done a fantastic amount with the show, brought a worldwide audience to it that wasn't quite there before. The BBC, I don't think, would have any problem with him. I think the biggest threats to Doctor Who are probably, the funding that the BBC is getting to make it. Stephen Moffat, fine. Female doctor, fine. No problems with any of these things. It needs to happen when it needs to happen, and as long as you've got strong actors and people that love the show, I think the show will just carry on being brilliant.
Just don't do something for the sake of doing it. Do it.
No,
if,
absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. I mean, Stephen Moffat said he gets asked this a lot. Can't we have a female doctor? Well, he said they will cast the best actor in that role, and I think that's what needs to happen. If it's a female, fine. That's fine. It's all there. The universe can do whatever it likes. All been established in the Doctor Who universe, all of this. Doesn't matter.
If they do get a female doctor, I want to put my vote in for what's her name that plays Peggy Carter. You guys need to help me out.
I know who you're talking about.
Rob, you know?
I don't want a female doctor. I want a female Gallifreyan who is basically not the Doctor, but another different Gallifreyan, is also good, not evil like the Master, but has different methods than the Doctor, and have them sort of bounce off each other. I want to see a different inter-Gallifreyan dynamic happen on that show.
Well, that may happen because, I mean, it's possible that Gallifrey will eventually show up. It's still in that pocket universe, as I recall, right, Rob?
You don't need the whole thing. Just one doctor, she's female, and they have, because you could have such amazing storylines where either they're on opposite sides working together, then you throw in River Song in there for a love triangle. It can be so weird and cool and bizarre and fun to do that.
Instead
of just gender swapping the doctor and having the same adventures that they're having, but with a male cute companion and placid sexual tension. That would be a repeat. No, throw in something new. If you're gonna have a female doctor, just have it be a different character and like spin the storyline around, like spin this thing on its head a bit.
There was a rumor going around that Maisie Williams was supposedly gonna be Susan Foreman, the Doctor's granddaughter from the first series back in 1963, but that's since been debunked. It's going to be a totally new character. But I think you could do that if you wanted to do the female Gallifreyan. That would be interesting to bring that character back because she hasn't been seen since the early 1960s.
And I've told you my theory, right?
I don't remember.
Okay, so you have the Doctor, and then you have the Master, which is another Gallifreyan. And if you look at various university diplomas, there's room for the Bachelor, which would be a lesser, less credible Gallifreyan time traveler.
I think
it is time for that character to make its appearance. Its lazy appearance.
There's been plenty of other Time Lords through the history of the show. I think bringing back old characters, like Susan Foreman, if they were to bring Susan back, I think that would be... I think that's a bit of a stretch for the modern audiences to say, here you go, here's a character you haven't seen since 1964. And this is why we brought...
For the majority of the people watching Doctor Who right now, here's a character you've never seen because you weren't born.
Well, or ever heard of.
Well, it wouldn't... I don't think it would matter. I mean, it'd be cool for the people that knew who the character was, but also if it's written properly and they have good stories, it wouldn't matter for people that wouldn't know who she was, in my opinion, at least.
So I think if people want Susan Foreman, they can go to Big Finish Productions, and there's a few stories there with Susan in there meeting newer versions of the Doctor. I don't know.
Is that stuff, is the Big Finish stuff, is that canon?
I think the feeling with Doctor Who canon is that everything's canon. Even all the stuff that contradicts itself, everything has to be canon because it does just contradict itself. Big Finish is moving, I suppose, more towards what you consider canon because they've got the rights to use some of the new new monsters in the show, and they're doing the new unit series with Kate and Osgood. So I think it's definitely seen as being more canon than it used to be. But you go back to all the books, all the new adventure books and audio plays in the past, and you go, well, what is canon? It doesn't matter. If it's Doctor Who and it's fun, that's okay for me.
Okay, so one last thing before we move on to the next item on the list of things to do. Rob, what are you looking forward to in this new season?
This sounds really stupid, but just sitting down with the kids and watching it. It's a great thing to sit down with the kids on a Saturday night and have something to look forward to, and they can be excited by it and understand it and be a little bit scared by it. That's why I love the show now.
Are you hoping that they get scared and jump behind the couch?
It's not the scared somewhat. I mean, my boy's four, and he loves the Daleks. The Daleks are just the best thing ever. He's not scared by the Daleks. They're cool. I think the only time he was scared by the Daleks was when he stole a couple of my toy Daleks and left them on his bedroom floor, and I told him that, you know, at night time when he's asleep, they do move a bit. That probably wasn't the thing to say because they came back into my room the very next morning.
Can we talk about the Daleks for 2 minutes?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Like, Dave's defeated. Yeah, if it will shut you up, Dan. Have you noticed, I mean, okay, as Robert's a Doctor Who fan, the Dalek culture seems awesome. Have you noticed how the Daleks are so unified and encouraging of each other and have such strong egos? I was looking, every time I see an episode with the Dalek, they're always... Every time they converse with the Cybermen, it's like, millions of Cybermen, three Daleks, no contest. And every time they do something and achieve something, they say, yeah, Daleks, go. Their work ethics and, I mean, their HR department must be amazing because they never argue and they're always, like, high-fiving each other as much as plungers can. It's amazing.
JF, do you know much about the original series of Doctor Who then?
Just a bit of Tom Baker stuff when I was a kid.
So up until recently then, you know, the Daleks, this history of hating each other. You know, the Daleks just don't like anything that is not exactly like that particular Dalek. So there's been Dalek civil wars. I suppose even in the new series we've seen with the new paradigm Daleks, and they didn't like the old Daleks because they weren't exactly the same as them, so they got blasted. The Daleks are very kind of complicated, I guess.
I guess. I mean, there's so many episodes where they're, I mean, at some point they think they've killed the doctor, and they go, Daleks are superior, Daleks are supreme, there's four of them, they do like almost this little dance, like, wow, man, they're so supportive of each other. Amazing.
Okay, so how would you feel, instead of Daleks, we would talk about droids?
It depends. You know, if you talk about your goddamn droid, Dave, I'm going to be jealous and unhappy.
Okay, so this is our recommendations segment. And my recommendation this week is the toy that I got as a gift from my awesome wife, Stephanie, and that is the BB-8 Sphero droid that moves exactly like the BB-8 from the upcoming Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. I was not expecting this. It is awesome. It's fun to play with. I did an unboxing video and a hands-on video that you can check out on the Galactic Netcasts YouTube channel, youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. It's fun. It's it does a lot of neat things. You can actually have a patrol on its own. Like, BB-8 will just cruise around your room as long as its battery holds out. And as long as it's connected to whatever device, because it needs an app for it to work. So once you get this, you need to download the app from your App Store or iTunes. And it's only available, it's not available on every platform, I found out. Like, it's not available on my Moto G, so I had to use my wife's iPad, which is better because it's got this really beautiful interface. So you can have it go on patrol, you can drive it yourself, you can give it commands just like Google Now or Siri or any of those. You can say, it's a trap is one of the commands, and it'll go cruising, it'll find a place to hide, it's fun. And it reacts like to your commands, it makes different noises like it's speaking to you. It also has a 3D message feature where you record a message on your device and then play it back. You have to point your device towards BB-8, and it looks like it's projecting a 3D message, just like R2-D2 from Episode 4. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's the BB-8 Sphero droid.
So Dave, what I'm thinking would be really cool is that, you know, BB-8 is out now as a toy. We haven't seen the movie. What if BB-8 is a total jerk in the movie? What if he is, you know, the new Jar Jar? We've got all of these,
exactly,
these toys that are just like, he could be an absolute knob.
Then there's going to be a lot of pissed off people. Because he looks so damn cute. I mean, on that trailer, he's peeking around the corner. He's like, what's going on, buddy? Just me being a cute little droid.
Have you noticed that his name BB-8 seems to be the initials for beach ball, and the 8 seems to be the number that looks the most like him?
They probably did that on purpose.
That's my theory.
No, it's a great theory. Yeah.
I have the weirdest theories. I'm jealous, Dave. Honestly, when that thing was announced, I looked for a place I could get it that wouldn't be too complicated, and I couldn't find anything locally.
You know what sucks? It doesn't suck. It's good for me. But it almost didn't happen. Like, this, she bought this on a whim. Like, she wasn't even kind of planning on getting it. Like, it was kind of last minute because my wife worked for Chapters, which is a chain of bookstores here in Canada. And the one that she worked at, that we stopped by first, they were out. But she called to another store, and they actually had one, and we were going over to the other store for another reason, to pick up something else. So she totally surprised me, and it was awesome that we got one because they were sold out all over the place.
With good reason. It looks amazingly cool.
Yeah. So check out the video again, youtube.com/galacticnetcast. I have unboxing and hands-on. So
I've seen the videos, and if you don't have one, it's a great way to live vicariously through Dave.
Thanks. All right. So JF, do you have any recommendations this week?
Wow. Actually, this is going to be weird. I've been watching the Clone Wars animated series recently. For anybody that really hated the prequels, I recommend watching Clone Wars, because I don't want to say it redeems the prequels. The prequels still have a lot of their faults, but it makes you feel a lot better about them. It answers questions, and it fills in certain gaps that makes you go, okay, it's not that bad. I'm not saying that it makes the prequels good. It makes them slightly more palatable, but the series itself is brilliant. It's an anthology series. It's not necessarily in chronological order. It doesn't focus on any particular character for a very long. I mean, it goes back and forth between characters that you know, and it is not. It's very Star Wars in the sense that one moment it feels very for kids because it's got that dumb Ewok level or droid level humor, and then someone gets chopped in two by a lightsaber the next scene. So it's got that Star Wars feeling a lot. The acting is beautiful. They've got a few of the original actors to reprise some of their roles. And it really does a good job of explaining why some of the dumb things that happened. And here's the weird thing. We've all watched this documentary on the making of the prequels, where we hear George Lucas make these terrible, terrible call about more CGI, more Jar Jar. Jar Jar is the key to all this. And just dumb decision after dumb decision. And then I was reading up on the making of Clone Wars, and he's involved as a producer, and he does the opposite, where a lot of the things I thought were brilliant ideas for the series are his idea. And I'm confused, like an adolescent growing hair for the first time in places. I don't know what happened.
When was the Clone Wars? That was after the prequels, right?
Yeah, it was after prequels, and it's supposed to basically bridge the gap between the episode 2 and episode 3.
Okay.
And there's these brilliant moments of with the use of the right. First of all, the writing is brilliant, the dialogue is brilliant, the use of music and dialogue and the scenes that they build, where you sort of get the progression of Anakin towards the dark side. Feels more natural, more organic in that series. And I think someone that would watch the first episode would hate it. Then the second episode would go, eh. Then would watch that series, and then the third episode would probably end up with a very, very a much better experience than we've had just going through the theater. So that's my recommendation.
Okay. Well, cool. I've never watched any episode of The Clone Wars, so...
It's on Netflix.
Oh, it is?
In Canada.
Oh, okay. So maybe I should check that out. I do like Rebels a lot, so...
Rebels is brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm the reason I started watching Clone Wars is because I want to watch Rebels, and I said I might as well watch Clone Wars first, and I'm not regretting it.
You'll like Rebels a lot. It's got another cute droid. What's the Rob? What's the droid's name on Rebels?
Chopper.
Yeah, Chopper.
Look, cute, funny, weird, sort of stereotypical things are part of the Star Wars DNA. The first scene in Episode 4 is a very fabulous droid chatting with another droid and going beep beep boop as they're running around in the corridors of a starship. So anybody that says, oh, no, humor has no place in Star Wars, sit down, settle down, buddy.
Yeah.
It's the first thing you see.
Yeah.
So I'm eager for Rebels.
All right.
And the silly droid.
Yeah. And by the way, Star Wars is everywhere. There's not a piece of merchandise that's not being touched in some way by Star Wars. I saw some creamers, some non-dairy creamers, not in the shape, but with the labels of C-3PO and R2-D2.
I saw Boba Fett. I thought I saw Boba Fett.
Possible. They're bringing out both the new characters and the old characters. No matter where you go, there's Star Wars merchandise. The blitz is on. It's worse than the election Canada right now. It's everywhere.
it's probably worth waiting 6 months and then going to the pound shop and picking it all up there.
Oh, the dollar store. I got that. All right, Rob, do you have any particular recommendations?
So I've only got one tiny one, which was, I don't know, can this be seen on there? So this is from Big Finish. This is an audio play from Big Finish.
Okay.
The Sixth Doctor, The Last Adventure. So proper Who geeks would know that when the Sixth Doctor changes into the Seventh Doctor, we just see the tiniest event at the beginning of Time of the Rani. We don't know how the Doctor needed to regenerate, so this story tells those adventures. It plugs this missing hole in Doctor Who mythology, and it's a cracking listen.
Okay. Do you know what the website is for? Is it Big Finish? Just Google Big Finish Productions. Is that the?
Yeah. I think it's just bigfinishproductions.com.
Okay. All right.
It's bigfinish.com.
Okay. All right. Cool. I love audio plays. I love audio dramas. And from what I've heard, they do a really, really good job. So,
They're brilliant. And if you pay attention to them on Facebook as well, and you'll see when they do their offers, so you can get them for cheap, maybe like £2.99 for getting a complete story. And they're brilliant. Yeah. So much of it.
Okay. All right. So, feedback time. Darth Maul 23 emailed in at galacticnetcasts@gmail.com to comment about the live YouTube unboxing of the Star Wars toys we talked about last week. Neither of you guys were here. But he said that the favorite ones that he has seen, besides the BB-8, which I'm sure is on his list as well, is the Millennium Falcon and X-Wing fighter quadcopters. Have you guys seen these?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean they look pretty good.
If I was to get into, if I didn't already have a quadcopter, I'd definitely want that Millennium Falcon. But it's got to be just super spendy. I haven't priced it, but it's got to be up there in price.
Is it out there to buy now? Can you get hold of it?
I think so. Pretty sure. I've seen it.
Let's see.
Yeah, you guys Google. You guys,
that's what I'm doing.
I mean, it's the kind of thing that I try to fly in the house and it would just crash into everything, and they say, oh, it's super durable, but you know, give it to my kids for 5 minutes and it'll be in pieces.
Yeah, that's the if you want to test how good a toy is, just give it to a couple of kids.
It is $312 Canadian.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of spendy.
They're just giving it away, aren't they?
Well, like I say, next year pound shop.
Yeah. At least half price when the next movie comes out.
Yeah.
All right, one more piece of feedback. Daryl Johnson, a contributor to this podcast, he actually does a thing called Who Knew? It's a little, like, three-minute podcast-type thing. Well, it is a podcast. We call it a Galactic Net Bite every week. You can check it out on our website, gncasts.com. But we had a discussion last week about Under the Dome, and he sent us a voicemail about it, and here's what he has to say.
Hi there, Dave. It's Daryl here, your European liaison officer. Under the Dome. Now, I have watched every single episode of Under the Dome. But would you like to know something? Oh, you're right. It needed putting out of its misery in Series 1. Why have I stuck with it? That's a very good question. I think it's to do with the acting. No, really, what a crock, frankly. But that's sort of why I like it. It's absolutely nothing like Stephen King's books. It's one of the worst science fiction premises I've ever had any dealings with. I think I watch it because it's so rubbish that it's watchable. But it needs to be put out of its misery. The dome needs to be shattered, and those actors never need to appear on TV. Is that harsh? Well, I don't think so. Anyway, that's a message from your European liaison officer.
Thank you, Daryl. Rob, being a Stephen King fan, how have you seen Under the Dome? And if so, what do you think of it?
I've read the book. Never watched the show. The book itself, though, that started out with really fantastic premise, and the end just went all over the place. Now, I don't know anything about the TV series. Do you think they'll get out at the end? Is it being cancelled now?
Yeah, it's being cancelled. They're actually bringing the dome down, so they're actually gonna get out.
Oh, well, I don't think Daryl will be too happy with that. Maybe they should just let them right in there.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so feedback, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. You can call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966, or jump onto our website, gncasts.com, and click that record your voice message. Before we talk about you guys, let's I've got to remind everybody that you can subscribe to our podcasts, not just this one, the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, but all of our podcasts that we have. We have The Alien Invasion. We have The Sci-Fi Geeks Club. We have Weird World Weekly. We have Galactic Gaming News. Who Knew? We have Adventure Party. And we've got Podcast of Terror. So we have 7 podcasts right now. And there's more on the way. We're working on a comic book podcast. So check them all out at gncasts.com. Click on the subscribe tab for all the links to where to go. Or just if you're on iTunes, if you do the iTunes thing, just search for the Sci-Fi Geeks Club or Galactic Netcasts. Or we're also have all of our shows on Stitcher as well. Or any place, basically, where you can get podcasts, just search for ours, and you will find it. Also, don't forget, you can join the Galactic Collective by going to our website again, gncasts.com, and there's a square little image on the right-hand side of each screen that says, Join the Galactic Collective, and it's basically a way of joining our community of fans, listeners, and people just that enjoy our podcast and follow us on social networks. And it was just a cute little name that we came up with. And yeah, Galactic Collective, details at gncasts.com. All right, JF Dubow, thank you very much for being my cohort on this episode. Can I really
just plug something real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
I forgot something about the book thing I'm doing.
Okay.
I'm running this contest, actually.
Oh, yeah. You want to kill somebody, right?
I
want
to kill someone. Here's the thing. This includes people that I have already pre-ordered. So, Dave, you're in.
Yes.
What I'm doing is I'm going to take all the names of people that have pre-ordered the book and all the recommendations from people to people who have pre-ordered the book. And I'm going to raffle up. I'm going to pick a name at random from that list, and I'm going to get in touch with that person. And we're going to sit down, and we're going to talk about how to include their likeness and namesake in the book as a minor character that I will then gruesomely murder in the story. It's an incentive to, like, it's a horror fantasy book, so I'm going to be killing a bunch of people. I think I can manage to work in someone's likeness, and it's a cool way of getting people involved, of getting in touch with the community. At first, I was doing this to drive more interest towards the book, but then I don't think I care anymore. I just want to publish the book so I can actually just kill one of my supporters in the book. That just abuses me to great length. So that's a thing I'm doing. So again, just go to jfdubow.com/books to place in your pre-order and learn how you can reference the book and increase your chances of being killed.
All right. Never have people been more excited about the possibility of dying than they are right now.
Do they get to choose how they die?
Well, that's why I want to have a discussion with them, because I want to be able to get the likeness that they want, not just, like, I want to nail the personality that they want. I want to use the name that they want, and also discuss death options. So obviously there's a certain limit to, because I don't want it to detract from the story. I don't want it to be this weird thing that doesn't fit just so I can run a contest. I need it to fit and flow with the story. And I've already got scenes where people get killed where I can probably change out someone very easily. But that's why I need to, whoever does win this raffle, I want to have a chat on Skype or whatever and discuss how they wanted to die with them. That's an important part. Exactly. Well, dying is an important stage in life, and you want to be able to plan it correctly.
All right. Robert Scott Norton, thank you for being our guest this week on the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. It was a pleasure having you on, man.
Thank you so much. It's been great fun.
You're welcome. Tell us again about your books and where people can find them, where people can find you online, all that great stuff.
The easiest place to find me is robertscottnorton.com. And there you've got links to the two books I've got out at the moment. So there's The Face Stealer, and there is a collection of short stories called The Drifter. There's also the audiobook of The Face Stealer. And if you keep your eye on that page, over the next few months you should see the first three coming out of the new series.
Awesome. Looking forward to that. Cool. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. I'm Dave Nelson, and on behalf of, I always have to remember everybody's name, Brad,
Anessa,
and Matt, hang on.
Bye, Dad.
We will talk to you guys next time for another production of Galactic Netcast and the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. We'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you for joining us for another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Did you know you could help support this network financially for as little as $1 a month? Come on, that's less than a cup of coffee. Support this network now at patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. If you liked what you heard, then make sure to subscribe for free on iTunes, Stitcher, or by going to gncasts.com/subscribe. And if you really enjoyed the podcast, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Even better, tell your friends and family about the Sci-Fi Geeks Club from Galactic Netcasts.